right now we're talking about President Trump's trip to Brussels. He's moved on his foreign trip. And we and my name is Vince Colonnais, by the way. I'm joined by Tony Schaefer.
Hey, good morning.
Should mention that thing.
Yeah.
We're joined now by Ambassador John Bolton on the phone to talk about the ongoing Trump foreign trip, the first one. Ambassador, thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Glad to be with you.
Good morning. Hey, so you've got the president now moving on to Brussels, and this is one of the more interesting components of his trip, for sure, given the president's language about NATO. It's his talk about it being sort of obsolete in the past. But over the course of his administration, it seems like he's had something of a shifting attitude, thanks in part to people like Jim Mattis, who is much more in line with having that alliance. What are you expecting out of this NATO meeting today?
Well, I think it has the prospect to be a very good meeting. There's reporting out of Europe this morning that France and Germany have dropped their reservations to having NATO in some kind of formal way join the coalition against ISIS. This has been something the Trump administration has been pushing. It had run into a lot of opposition, but again, we'll see what happens at the meeting itself. But if you had NATO, as it did in Afghanistan after the 9/11 attacks, if you had NATO joining with the United States and the Arab partners against ISIS, I think that would be significant. And, you know, it may be because of the attack in Manchester, or it may be because it's actually a pretty good idea to have NATO more involved in the war against terrorism. It looks like this Trump proposal is about to be adopted. And if so, you'd have to say that that brings him out of his meetings in Brussels with a pretty significant victory.
I mean, that's an interesting point. If terrorists were hoping for less opposition, having an attack just before this NATO meeting is doing them no favors.
Hey, John, I got a question for you. I mean, look, I agree with you. I couldn't agree more. No, I was in Afghanistan. I was actually there when NATO took over from ISAF, which was significant because ISAF was completely feckless and without any merit. So I saw the good effects of NATO being able to focus on that. With that said, we've recognized, I think, via this Manchester attack that this was a regional issue. It looks like this guy traveled through the region to Libya. You know, there was issues regarding Syria. So clearly this is transnational, and I think that's part of the problem that's hampered the police forces from doing their job. You don't have a transnational organization. I think NATO could fill its space. But my question for you is more specifically about the alliance itself in Turkey. Turkey has been a real problem in my judgment studying that, and I've talked to certain officials within the context of the current administration, and there's some issues there with Turkey. How do you make Turkey's role in NATO going forward now?
Well, I think it's an important and very hard question, not because of anything that NATO has done to push the Turks away, but because what President Erdogan has been doing steadily,
right,
first as prime minister, now as president of Turkey. I think to move the country away from the Kemal Atatürk post-Ottoman Empire vision of a secular Turkish state, one that looked toward Europe for its future. We know that Erdogan has purged the judiciary and put in Islamicists. He's done the same to senior officers in the military. This last supposed coup gave him a chance to arrest tens of thousands, literally, of his opponents, and to increase his own personal power, which just happened again in a recent referendum.
Right.
You know, when he was mayor of Istanbul 20 years ago, he said, democracy is like a streetcar. You ride it to the stop you want, and then you get off. And I'm very worried he's getting off. He's talked to Putin very intensely in the past year or so, and obviously if Turkey breaks away as the southeastern anchor of NATO, the one Muslim country in the alliance all these years, it could have very significant effects both in Europe and the Middle East. So I'm very worried. I don't think the majority of Turks really want to go where Erdogan wants to, but you can't deny his political success in Turkey, and it's bad news for the alliance.
Yeah, Erdogan, by the way, doing himself no favors in his visit to the United States, having bodyguards beat up protesters that can't.
Yeah, no, it's
well,
look, that's an example, I think, of his attitude. There's some reporting that he directly ordered the attack himself, and I think the Trump administration has been pushing back. I think they could continue to push back, should, because it's just unacceptable to have this happen on American soil.
A lot has been made of NATO countries, besides the United States, of course, failing to meet their commitment on how much they actually spend in NATO, the president making that a big issue. Should we expect to hear countries actually pledging to meet that commitment, that GDP commitment, coming out of this meeting?
Well, I would hope so. I mean, this is it's not like the United States imposed this commitment on anybody. They all agreed to it, and only a few have met it. Some have announced plans and some budget increases. But look, here you have Germany spending roughly 1.1% of its GDP on defense, or roughly half what the commitment is. Now, you know, the alliance really, when it's basically the second largest economy, is not meeting its commitment. That is a problem. And this is something we've experienced this for years in NATO. We've been pleading with them to get their defense expenditures up, many of these European countries. I think Trump has finally got their attention. Look, there are other things NATO needs to correct. Its decision making is sclerotic at times. Tony, I'm sure you experienced in Afghanistan what they call red cards, where national military units basically say, well, we'll follow the commands orders except here, right. Here, and here.
Where, oh, it's a veto. Incredibly, yeah. A military veto, which does not exist in the military thinking. You're right, John.
So there are plenty of reforms, but let's not come away with this thinking NATO has been cured of all of its ills. But I do think some kind of combined effort on the terrorism front is a good thing for NATO to do, and it's a step forward for Trump.
NATO leaders on the issue of Russia are going to want the president to address the annexation of Crimea and maybe even Russian meddling in elections. I'm not certain that President Trump will say anything about that. What do you think?
Well, I think he should. Look, I think the evidence, I wish we could get some of the intelligence declassified about what the Russians did do in the U.S. election. I think they were trying to undermine democratic institutions, but I think people are kind of getting tired of hearing about these allegations. They'd like to hear some of the specifics. I can tell you that many people in Europe, particularly in the Balkans, are worried about Russian involvement there and trying to interfere in elections in some of the newer democracies in Central and Eastern Europe. Some claims that they intervened in France and will be intervening in Germany. So it's on people's minds. And look, this goes directly to the popular trust in our democratic institutions. So I'm as careful as anybody, I think, to protect intelligence sources and methods. But I think when you have this kind of concern, it's important that the people understand what they're facing, and we're obviously in the midst of a partisan squabble about here in the United States. I would hope that people could look a little bit farther ahead, because we're at each other's throats already politically, and this kind of disinformation campaign, which the Russians were outstanding at during the Cold War, if that in fact is what's going on, I think the people need to know about it.
John, one thing very briefly to follow up on is this concept, this competing concept, if you will, of the EU army. I love this idea of politicians having their own army, but I think it'd be counterproductive to split the resources and focus on this. So what do you make of Germany, I think, being the primary driver of this EU army that has been proposed?
I am absolutely against the EU having any military capability.
Here.
All right, we got you on the record on that.
Yeah, people who say that this is a plus, you have Europe cooperating more. Let me tell you, if you want to undercut faith in NATO and the United States, go ahead and have the Europeans say they're capable of defending themselves. Because I think the overwhelming response here would be, okay, fine, go and do it then. The trouble with our European friends and allies is they talk a good game and then they don't do it. So you get the worst of both worlds. They say they're going to have a greater military capability and then they don't create it. So we end up with rhetoric that splits NATO and a decrease in overall alliance capabilities.
Thank you very much. Ambassador John Bolton stopping by with his wisdom this morning.